Ancestor, let me be your drum tonight. Speak through me. Ancestors, let me be your drum tonight. Speak through me. Bestow me with elephant ears. Allow me to see.
Bird said, see with your ears and hear with your eyes. Bird said, see with your ears and hear with your eyes.
Ancestors, let me be your well tonight, flowing cool and clear. Ancestors, let me be your well tonight, flowing cool and clear. Bestow me with eagle's eyes, allow me to hear.
Bird says, see with your ears and hear with your eyes. Bird said, see with your ears and hear with your eyes.
Welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black Arts and Culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. And that was Upsurge. And Upsurge is having a farewell concert. They are no longer living here in the San Francisco Bay. And we certainly miss them. And they are going to be performing a farewell concert on Friday, September 28th, which is not this Friday, but the week after, at the Freight and Savage, 8 o'clock. Upsurge Music and Dance Ensemble is a jazz and spoken word ensemble from San Francisco, and they've been around for about 20 years here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and now they are in New York, lucky New York. So it's going to be really fabulous at this farewell concert, and, you know, folks around the East Coast, definitely they can catch them because they are definitely sort of familiar there on that coast, and certainly are one of the first calls for politically astute artists, because not only are they wonderful, they also, you know, they have a message that's always right on time. So hopefully we might be speaking to Raymond Nat Turner this morning, but if we aren't, certainly that particular piece, Ancestor Call, is just a little taste of what you'll be in store for on Friday at the concert here in Berkeley. And that particular piece is from their CD, Chromatology. So we are going to play an interview with one of the members of Harold Melvin's Blue Notes, and they open at the Razz Room tonight, Wednesday, September 19th, and they will be in town through Sunday, September 23rd, so there are a lot of opportunities to go catch them opening night, and you can go back. So we are going to play this wonderful interview with Anthony that I recorded a while back. And we've been playing little snippets, and we played the whole thing a couple of weeks ago, so we're going to play it again just in case you missed it, because it was certainly a wonderful, wonderful interview. And, yeah, and so that's what we have in store for you today. And for those who have been catching the L.A. Rebellion films at the Pacific Film Archive, tonight is another night, and Thursday is a... I think they're going to have another screening. So, yeah, these films are really fantastic, and you don't want to miss any of them. And I might be able to, if I have my notes together here, I might be able to tell you what the films are which are screening this weekend. It's not this weekend, but tonight and tomorrow. But I don't see it on me. Hand right away, right at the moment. So I might have to get back to you after we have this interview with Anthony Brooks, which is really insightful. He talks about where Harold Melvin's, where the whole idea for the group, the name Blue Notes, where it comes from. And it's really, really quite interesting. So here we go. Anthony Brooks of Harold Melvin's Blue Notes. Which is, reading through the history of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, I'm like, goodness gracious, one really has to study it to get the changing personnel right. And
yeah,
wow,
we can fill a room up with the Blue Notes. We can fill a room up with the Blue Notes. We can have a reunion.
Yeah, particularly if you call on the ancestral spirits, right?
Yeah. We've had Ollie Woodson. It was a Blue Note back in the 70s. We've had Billy Paul tried out for the group, didn't make it.
Wow.
Couldn't dance.
So there's a job description, huh?
Yeah. I started in 1970.
Okay.
I was the opening act for Teddy Harrell and that particular group. Harrell wanted to have a review.
Uh-huh.
So he started in a review with Sharon Page. She was doing a song by Diana Ross, Good Morning Heartaches, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have a hit yet. And I was the opening act.
Okay.
So we did that for like 5 years. Sharon had went ahead and did a song by Dusty Springfield called Hope That We Could Be Together Soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned to be her biggest hit.
Right.
Then Tools and G, oh, McFadden and Whitehead, we call them Tools and G. McFadden and Whitehead wrote a song called Bad Luck.
Uh-huh.
And that put her on the map on the disco chart.
Okay. Yeah.
And they wrote that and Wake Up Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he got shot in the head by a guy that was trying to shoot somebody else.
For real?
Yeah, and passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, horrible.
And Gene died right after that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were writing partners for 40 years.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
wow.
But a guy shot him in the neck while he was changing the tie. I thought he was somebody else.
Mm.
Tragic. Anyway, we preach that. We got to stop killing each other.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Boy, the perils.
Every show.
Yeah, the perils of handguns. We just need to outlaw
them.
It's like they.
But they won't do that.
No, they won't, because the gun lobbyists are a bigger contingent in Washington.
And everywhere else, because
mm-hmm.
they're getting cash funding.
Oh yeah.
You know, Congress is. They don't even say no when there's money involved.
Mm-mm. No, they
don't. They get paid to say no.
yeah, that's interesting. I never heard of it put like that, but it is so true.
That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's graft and corruption on a big scale.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they get paid to say no.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're getting paid to back, you know who.
Mm-hmm. Right, and paid
it's
to say yes.
It's all about money. We don't have it, so we got to go with the guy that's just serious about helping people.
Yeah. The woman who's over NAACP here in California, the representative, I was at this Black Psychologists National Conference, and she was saying that until black folks start putting some money behind their support of these politicians,
we're gonna
continue to be out spent for.
Well, we're outsourced now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why these guys are going into movie theaters and shooting people and are legally insane and nobody checks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sad the way our system is set up, whereas you have to be rich to be accepted. And our Congress is holding the country hostage because they could care less. All they want to do is get a black guy out of office.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we are collateral damage to their success of Britain and to somebody else with money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway, that's
talk over. Yeah, and it's so funny. You're from D.C. and I was like,
right.
You're the only one. I'm like, I was looking, trying to like pay attention to where people are from. Like, how did you get into the Philly camp? And you from D.C. Like, what happened? I mean,
well,
I understand that you were opening NAC and for 5 years, and you know, Mr. Melvin knew you. However. You're not.
I'm in a nightclub. Singing. He said, there's a line around the block. Who's there? They said, Tony Brooks. I want him. But you know, it's so funny. We had 3 Blue Notes from Washington, D.C.
Oh, really? Okay. Who are the others?
Jerry Cummins, the one that's in the picture with Teddy.
Okay.
Like, skin guy with that crazy suit on.
Hmm.
And Dwight Johnson, who came in right after. They were in the group together.
Mm-hmm.
Called the International.
Okay.
And Harold had them as also as he had me and my group.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, Harold always had spare parts. So Jerry was a spare part because Lloyd Parks, he had some conflict with Harold before. He was only in the group a year.
Mm-hmm.
But he calls himself an original. That's how it is. You know, the original group was in '56. Only original was Harold Melvin.
Right.
Period. Teddy Pendergrass, everybody else was hard help.
Mm-hmm.
We all are. But
right.
That group scored because of McFadden and Whitehead.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling Huff took credit for it, but Toodles and Gene did it right.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote the biggest hits for the Blue Notes.
Yeah.
Gambling Huff wrote If You Don't Know Me By Now with some help.
Mm-hmm.
But Bad Luck, Wake Up Everybody, you know, all those songs came from McFadden and Whitehead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the fabulous guys, good people. Miss both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so who's doing the writing for the group now?
Right now we're in a mode of doing what people want to hear.
Mm.
But we
like
are
the legacy kind of thing?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But we're looking for some new material.
Uh-huh.
that fit what we plan on having. You know, we don't want to hip hop it. We want to do what we've been doing,
mm-hmm.
but with a little bit more flair, more smooth jazz now than is what they call it, rather than R&B.
Now some people say it's the same thing.
Yeah, I know they are basically, but that's where we're going. That's where we're going. You guys have a smooth jazz station that I love.
Which one, KBLX? Which one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I play it on my and when I'm in the gym.
On my
I love that station.
Okay.
That's one of the best stations in the country.
Wow. Nice. Are you going to be interviewed on their station?
No. But that's just my personal opinion.
Well, gosh, they should have you on to say it.
Yeah, because it's on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I pick it up, and they we don't have any smooth jazz stations on the East Coast.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh.
No.
So you want purists, like you have, you know, like the real jazz, you know.
We have PFW, and we have the Baltimore station with the bass man. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have any smooth jazz stations at all.
Mm.
They terminated them.
Mm.
All we have is Kathy Hughes.
Okay.
She plays the same 10 records every 15, every hour. Actually, they don't think people pick that up, but everybody's picking it up, so they stop listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so everybody's looking for some new music, but hey, whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So,
Now, the group consists of, if you read the bio, of myself and three guys from Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Rufus Thorne was in a group with David Ebo and Dwight Johnson.
Okay.
And they did Pray It.
Mm.
He got a gold record for that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Cummings was on that also was on that LP.
Right.
Donnell Gillespie came in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
After Ebo passed.
Well, actually, it says 1990.
Yeah, well, David Ebo was in the group Ben, and
okay.
then the Gil Saunders came in after Ebo.
Okay.
And then Donnell came in.
Mm-hmm.
Gil Saunders was there for that period between Ebo and Donnell.
Mm-hmm.
In and out, he was singing with the other group, Bernie Williams,
mm-hmm.
and Pop Larry Brown, and Lloyd Parks before he came to Harold's group.
Mm-hmm.
So he had been with the other group before he got to that group. So it was two groups. You know how they break off.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to make money. So now it's just us.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah.
And we kind of, I really try to make it like it was and not to treat it like it was when I started.
Mm-hmm.
I left for 15 years.
Oh, what did you do when you left?
Oh, my wife had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to stop singing. I had two kids, so I raised my kids.
Okay.
And I was a director of admissions for a tractor trailer school.
Which school?
It was called Diesel Institute.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I left there and turned into an insurance agent. Then I did mortgages and insurance at the same time. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
For 15 years. And Harold had a stroke, and he told Ovilia to call me up because I was the only one that could actually work and do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't turn it down because I loved the Melvins. They were good for me when my wife passed. Harold understood, and
mm-hmm.
he did a lot of personal things that I really appreciate.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was a great. I looked at that unsung thing, and I just couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that $100 in the mattress stuff was ridiculous. Teddy's never been in Harold's bedroom. Harold never gave him money. He wanted $3,000 a night. That's why he didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anyway, that's another story. We could write a book on that.
Yeah. Have you written the book?
People are still alive. They killed me.
Oh. Oh, you know, you can make the movie. Make a movie.
I can make a movie that'd be fictitious, like Sparkle.
Yeah, that'll work. Sparkle was a good movie.
I gotta have somebody to write it.
Mm.
I gotta have somebody that I can trust to write it for real. But still, it's a hell of a story.
Mm-hmm. Because you talk about people like, I'm trying to think, one of the great, great band leaders, Duke Ellington, and how he kept a band together. And I'm looking at, you know, Harold Melvin, it sounds like, you know, he just kept his band together. You know, okay, well, we got to revision this. Okay, this person's leaving. Okay, well, here's so-and-so. All right, this person's not working out. Let's move to this. I mean, it seemed like he kept his band together. It had different looks.
He was a hell of a teacher. And he was always on top of what people liked.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pulse for that.
Yeah.
And each group would have its own identity.
Mm-hmm.
But still be successful.
Yeah, yeah.
And and it was fabulous the way it pulled off. So when he was sick, and he told me to bring Tony in, so I could trust him. And he was right. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly, being with him, when I wasn't working with him,
mm-hmm.
he taught me production. He taught me how to be on stage. Because I did a couple of things on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And my nephew was band leader for Stacey Ladislaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to work with Johnny Gill and Stacey and even give them some enlightenment. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So we did a show in Mohegan Sun a couple of weeks ago, and Johnny Gill showed up with his grandmother. It was her 90th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought him on stage. Well, he asked him, could he come on stage with us? And he goes, no, I ain't turning down no D.C. homeboy. Come on up here. And it was great with him singing Wake Up With Us. We should have recorded. It's on Facebook, but we should have recorded.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good kid.
Yeah.
And see, now he's an old schooler, and I call him a child. But what happens is the business has stayed the same. The music's different, but it's still the same principles. You got to entertain folks. You know what I mean? You got to get on stage and do what you do. Now, I'm 63, and I'm still dancing.
Okay.
And we all are, you know, so we're not a young group, but we do. I got a group here in Washington called New Era that I'm working with. I'm passing it on to them.
Mm-hmm.
Five brothers, and they sing. They're excellent. So I wrote a couple of songs for them, and they're working on those now.
Oh, nice, nice.
They're young guys in their 20s
mm-hmm.
doing old school music
mm.
and dancing like the Blue Nuns.
Uh-huh. So part of the job description was that besides being able to sing, you had to be able to move too?
Yeah, can't be lazy.
Mm-hmm.
This group, you got to have feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to be a hoofer.
Yeah.
You always had to be a hoofer in the Blue Notes because mm-hmm. we don't stand still.
Yeah.
We do an hour show, we dance the whole show.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah,
so you almost be in good shape because I was noticing how, you know, 2010 was a really sad year for the ensemble. You know, all the people that passed that year, it's like, goodness gracious, that's like crazy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we had, we lost some real good friends, like Papa Squirrel with the Starlights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we lost some real good friends, Whitney and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and then, you know, from...
And they were younger, and we were just like, my God, what are they doing themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but, you know, our era, we're the last batch.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying my best to make sure that at least it's remembered by some younger acts.
Right, yeah, but, you know, and also, in, you know, the three members of the band, you know, Teddy Pendergrass, you know, in January, and then, you know, Roosevelt Brody.
Well, Brody was one of the singers that started it all,
mm-hmm.
and Harold brought in Teddy from there.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And Gamble and Huff didn't hear Teddy at first.
Mm-hmm.
Harold had to bring him, those songs were for the Dales. Originally,
mm-hmm.
they wanted to give him to the Dales, but Harold said, give Teddy a shot.
Right, because he was a drummer. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he was a drummer for Little Royal.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of Little Royal?
Uh-uh.
Little Royal was a James Brown impersonator.
Oh.
He called himself James Brown's little brother. And Teddy was his drummer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he left him in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Harold. Picked him up as a drummer. Lil Royal was a snake.
mm-hmm.
He didn't want to pay anybody. He didn't think Taylor was good enough. Taylor was a hell of a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best drummers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I watched him do a show from the drums, and it was fabulous. I wish I had taped it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because our drummer was sick, so Teddy did the whole show from the drums.
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He had some fantastic nights. And he had some bad nights, but he had some really fantastic nights on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a good musician. A humble guy at first, but, you know, people get into your head.
Uh-huh.
And you change. But Rug was a good man. All I can say. Mm-hmm. We called him Rug. Couldn't get a comb through his head.
That's funny. Yeah, and then Bernard Wilson, you know, he also passed in 2010.
Bernie was the choreographer.
Oh, okay.
Bernie was the guy that did all the steps. And he stole some of my steps, but I'm not going to talk about that. But Wilson was a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
So was Pop-Pop, or Larry Brown. We called Larry Pop-Pop, because
mm-hmm.
he was everybody's father. But Pop-Pop was a hell of a dancer, too. He gave me a line that I use now. He said, Tony, I dance on a dime, I give him 9 cents change. I thought that was great, so I used that one.
Wow.
But Larry Brown and Bernie, great musicians. Lloyd didn't stay long enough.
Mm.
Like I said, he was only there a year.
Uh-huh.
He had other issues. That would be in a book. I can't talk about those.
Yeah.
Sharon is my, I love her. We started together. We had trials and tribulations together, and she stuck by me when my wife passed, and I just love her to death, her and her own.
Mm-hmm.
But she had a stroke last year.
Oh, Sharon did?
Yeah. So mm-hmm. she's not ready to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I miss her.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting, you know, that you had women as a part of the ensemble, because a lot of times there were just the all-men groups and the all-women groups. And
well, Harold wasn't prejudiced,
mm-hmm.
because his wife was our manager.
Okay.
She still is.
Oh, she still is, okay.
She runs this, and Trudy Belvin is our road manager.
Oh, who's Trudy?
Trudy's the one that told me to call you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's my boss.
Okay.
Both of them.
Uh-huh.
Right. And they run this whole thing.
Two women.
They were the ones that brought me back.
Wow.
They were the ones that brought Sharon back.
Mm-hmm.
They got Donnell to come back, because Donnell was done after, you know, Harold. He just didn't feel it. He thought he couldn't work after Harold was sick. So. We got together, and Rufus Thorne, and I said, if Rufus is in, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got back together with Dwight Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But he died in dialysis.
Oh.
He was depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't go to dialysis, and he died. When he got there, it was too late.
Oh, my. Wow.
Like I said, that's a movie.
Yeah.
A lot of stories.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Cummings is a minister now.
Okay.
He was Reverend Jeremiah Cummings
mm-hmm.
now.
Where is he a minister at? In Philadelphia?
International. He just speaks at different churches.
Okay.
He wrote a book called From Gold to Glory.
Mm-hmm.
His days with the Blue Notes to the 3 gold records that he had.
Oh, so he tells it.
Yeah, he tells the story, but his story is kind of prejudicial because
mm-hmm.
he only talks about himself.
Okay.
And sometimes ministers have a way of being selfish. They think the calling for God is only toward them, and everybody else has to listen to their message.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have a message, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And our message can be holy, yeah? Our message can be spiritual, but we don't have to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you treat people is what your spirituality is.
Right.
Yeah, not what you say.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you are.
Right.
That's the way I was raised. Anyway.
So John Morris. Yeah, we're up to
a
whole set.
That's right. Volume 1, 2, and 3, huh?
Mm-hmm. So in a couple of more volumes, we can offer a deal, right?
And yeah, then we'd have to leave the country.
Well, a lot of the Blue Note fame came actually when you all were overseas. You were well received there, and actually,
and they still are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, still are. Mm-hmm. We went to. We haven't done a extensive European trip. It's just been like dabs here and there, but we kind of concentrated on South Africa.
Oh, okay.
And we've been there three times with Dennis Edwards.
Who's that?
Dennis Edwards' group, The Temptation.
Okay. Oh,
yeah, and,
nice.
Cyril Austin and his Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And, yeah, and we did 15 days, look, year full ass.
Oh, that's
and,
nice.
Yeah, and it was a great tour. They're great guys, and we sold out every night.
So
and
that
we
was.
15 days,
so you're talking 2010 then, year before last?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And we went back, went in 9 and in 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So we went with Mandela's people for the educational program in South Africa.
Uh-huh.
And we did a seminar every time we went to each city
mm-hmm.
with the kids on music.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was great. To have a choir of everybody singing and on mm-hmm. key was fabulous.
Yeah, what countries did you go to?
We went to Durban.
Uh-huh.
Johannesburg,
City,
mm-hmm. Cape Town, and what was another spot? Soweto.
Oh, you went to Soweto?
Yeah, we went to Mandela's house to Hope Air.
Oh, wow. Nice, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
great. Fabulous place. I even had surgery in South Africa.
You did?
Yeah, they cut a mole off my face that was cancer. So.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah, and it was free. They have a national health plan. How about that?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
They sure did. That's the same if they have one and we don't.
Yes, it is. It is.
But we do now, but again, we're talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance companies, you know, they tend to reject it because they can't regulate who
mm-hmm.
and what. Who, what, where, and when.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so that's all that. Again, we talk about big money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like my son calls it Shea Whitey. I can't print that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
so,
he's a 42-year-old radical. It's Shea Whitey.
It sounds like his dad's a radical, too, because I was reading your unusual bio, and it's like, what did it say something about? I thought it was really cool. Let me quote you to yourself. I got to scroll back up to. Oh, here it is. It says that that if I have the opportunity to dine with one person, living or deceased, I would like to dine with Malcolm X, and we would discuss the state or direction of Black America.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then your all-time favorite TV show is Sanford and Son. Love
yeah.
that. Yeah, and your movie is The Godfather. Sort of
yeah.
kind of work hand in hand. So have you dined with Malcolm X yet?
No. I will. I just don't know the year. But
okay.
I will.
Yeah.
But, as far as that, at Tennessee State, I did a couple of before I went with Harold. I went to college
mm-hmm.
in Nashville,
okay.
and we had to be off the street at 11:00.
Oh my!
All the Black folks had to be off the street at 11:00.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided not to get off the street at 11:00.
Hmm.
And we protested, and we got whipped.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, they shaved our heads and all this good stuff.
You mean the police
so,
did?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and we had Martin Luther King was shot. I was in Nashville.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And they just came after us. And they came on the campus, and we were having a rally, and they came on campus and just started shooting.
Hmm.
So they shot my roommate in the neck.
Oh, wow.
I dragged him off, pushed his spine across my head. I just panicked and dragged him, and I didn't realize I was saving his life. I was just trying to get both of us out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an interesting period in my life.
Wow, so that was 1968, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a radical.
Oh.
So I drove up to Howard University and took over the administration building, but I can't print that.
You did?
Yeah, I guess I can, yeah.
So you mean like you left Tennessee State and went up to back home?
We sure did, to demonstrate, but it turned into a takeover.
Oh, so did you hook up with Kwame Ture? Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
We had we had a lot of folks up there that were instrumental in helping us do this. And Stokely Carmichael, we had conversations that were deep. And Leroy Jones. And
Mary Baraka.
Israel Brown. My brother and him were friends.
Oh, for real? Wow.
Yeah, my brother went to jail in Cambridge when he set a building on fire. Yeah, so my family has history. And then I have a nun in my family.
You do? You have a nun?
Our Blade Sisters of Providence. She used to open up all the schools in the ghetto. She did Chicago, St. Louis, Charlotte, North Carolina, and California.
Oh, really? Where in California?
I don't know. I think it was San Francisco and L.A. Watts.
Oh, wow. And so what are these schools called?
They're Catholic schools.
I know, but what order, what?
Oh, the Oblate Sisters of Providence, the only black order of nuns.
How do you spell that, Oblate?
Oblate, O-B-L-A-T-E, is Oblate.
Okay.
Sisters of Providence.
Oh, okay. I have to look that up. So there's one in San Francisco. Okay.
Yeah, and their home base is in Baltimore.
Oh.
In Relay, Maryland. And they're all black nuns. And her name was Sister Marcelina Brooks.
Sister Marcelina Brooks.
Yeah. In fact, she went to Bowie State after she left the convent in her 50s and went to Bowie State College and was an acting president there.
She was the president of the college?
Yeah, that is Bowie University.
Wow.
And then she went to Federal City College and administrated it to the University of the District of Columbia.
Wow.
She went there because I had been there.
To Bowie or to Federal?
D.C.
Okay.
When they told me they were opening up a school in Washington College, I left Tennessee State. In a rush because I had to. I went back to Washington.
Well, they weren't that hospitable, goodness gracious.
We had the same problem. I met Marion Barry and it was love at first sight. We had a ball together. It was fun. But we created a college. I was on the student government then. I was singing and being a politician at the same time. So I do have some kind of... I can write my own book, but I don't know. I'm not finished yet.
Oh, you don't have to finish. You can have, we're up to like volume 6 now.
Yeah, but Marcelina's still alive, but she's in a nursing home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, she does.
Yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
I go
see her. Yeah.
She's 77 last week. So.
Oh, she's young. Okay.
Yeah, so I went to see her, but she doesn't recognize anybody.
So.
The last of my sisters.
Oh, wow. Did you graduate from Bowie State?
No, I went to UDC, the college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Federal State. I was in the first graduating class.
Oh, wow, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So are these black colleges?
Yes, Federal State. The University of District of Columbia was a black college, not anymore.
Oh.
It's homogenized now.
Oh, I like that, homogenized.
That's Washington word.
Oh, I like that. That's extremely visual, but also we understand what you're talking about.
Thank you. I'm all denied. But back then it was it was just us. Afros a whole bit. But it worked. We were just there to change. They wanted to eliminate it was a riot school. They only opened it up because they felt that since they rioted when King was killed, that they would give them something to do. So they opened up a small college so black folks could be educated and just calm them down. But we turned it into a university.
Huh.
Right. We went to Congress, and in fact, we had to go to Congress a couple of times to convince them to keep the school open. So they said, if you can get 6,000 students, we'll keep it open.
Okay.
So I took a band out from the school, and I had myself and Clavon Derricks. He won a Tony Award for Dreamgirls.
Oh, wow,
He was Johnny Thunder.
Yeah, I remember him,
Yeah, he went to school with me.
Oh, nice.
So we went out, we went to every high school in Washington and recruited 6,000 students with a stage show. I had a 35-piece band, a local act. His brother, he had a twin brother that played on Sanford and Son.
Oh.
He was Fred Sanford's nephew from St. Louis. So we went out and we recruited. We went to every high school in Washington. We had a we had the financial aid and admissions representatives, and when they went to the concert, they went in the back and signed up for purpose of the concert. And we took that to Congress, and they turned red. We had 6,000 students that have applied for admissions.
That's great. That's good. Right. So what was the rate of graduation?
Out of that 6,000 that came in, I really don't know, but I know it kept the school open to this day.
That's great. That's
it's University of District of Columbia now.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah, it's homogenized.
But it's homogenized. Does it mean homogenized student population or homogenized faculty or homogenized philosophically?
Both. All three, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm proud of it.
You're proud that it's homogenized?
Yes.
Okay. How, what do you mean by homogenized then?
Because we have all ethnicities in there now.
Mm-hmm.
And once it was considered to be a university,
mm-hmm.
it eliminated just the black populated concept. It made it an international school.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have people from all races going.
Yeah.
We have Jeff Rulin, who used to coach, he was the basketball player for the Wizards, as mm-hmm. a basketball coach. He's a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just all black now.
Yeah. What's wrong with all black?
There's nothing wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
It's just that we have so many different ethnicities in America now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, white folks are minority.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying. We've got folks from South America and India and Africa that are here now that want to be American citizens. And
mm-hmm.
we need to let them be able to do that.
Yeah, but then you think about sort of the rate of black young people, you know, graduating from college and university, and the numbers aren't great.
Well, the disparity is because of our educational history.
Mm-hmm.
We had when we were growing up, I don't know how old you are,
mm-hmm.
but we high school was a given.
Mm-hmm.
College was the thing. But when rap music came out and said you could still be stupid and make money, folks stopped graduating. And I hate to put a pin on it, but when you're talking about folks that there's not educational things happening, but to be a rapper, you got to be intelligent to write. But the industry wanted such negative connotations to develop that it killed our high school folks.
Mm-hmm.
Our educational system dropped off. And then you had Reagan telling folks that if you go to prison, we're not going to educate you no more. We're just going to lock you up in warehouse. And then you have another element.
Mm-hmm.
He eliminated classes and courses in prison.
Right.
And when you do that, all you have is a smart criminal coming out, talking about how he can do something else because the only thing he's learning is how to be a better criminal. So the disparity in our governmental policies, in our social policies, has increased our dropout rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, with the change of the institutions after integration, there was a significant drop in African-American achievement.
Right.
And when you go back and you look at the black community and its institutions, besides the church, you know, we're looking at education as being real primary in our community, and you had black teachers teaching black kids. There was a whole different kind of feeling about being smart, and
it's not cool to be smart.
No, not anymore.
And that's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's real sad, and it's still pervasive now.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to show its head again because of the younger generations and achievement level, but we still have a generation of people that still exist that didn't have that opportunity. They would rather be. I've seen some of my nieces and nephews who were really, really intelligent in school, but people shun them because they are.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to downgrade their intelligence so they can be accepted. And that's sad.
Right. Yeah.
And that's also, you know, I have folks that I talk to people and say, all I want is a paycheck. They don't care what they do, but you should anyway.
Mm-hmm.
My father always said, don't get a job, get a career.
Wow, forward-thinking dad, yeah.
Yeah, he was a black cock in Washington.
He was?
And, yeah, nobody wanted it. They should throw stuff at us. I was a cop.
Wow.
Yeah,
and you lived in the community, because I think back then
yeah.
the police were a part of the community, so you knew what everybody did for a living. So
yeah.
would people see the car in your driveway or something?
Yeah, he wouldn't drive his police car home.
Okay.
He drove it. He would never bring his gun in the house.
Wow, really? That's great.
No, I never saw his gun.
Mm-hmm.
He told me how to shoot it. We went down the country.
Uh-huh.
But I never saw a gun. He said, only use this once your life is threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as long as I'm around, your life ain't going to be threatened. And I love that.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, but my father was a federal cop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my brother was a police officer for 28 years.
Mm-hmm. Older brother or younger brother?
I'm the youngest of 10.
You're the youngest of 10 children?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So your mother a homemaker, or did she have a job, too?
My mother was a cook at Harrington's Restaurant in Washington, and then she got a job at the Pentagon as the chief of staff administrator.
Really?
Now, we were like the Jeffersons, and so we moved on up.
Oh, yeah, and Sherman Hensley just passed.
That's right. That was my buddy, too. I loved him.
Oh.
But we had great conversations because he's from Philadelphia.
So oh, he is? Oh.
Yeah, in fact, the church, when he was playing Amen,
uh-huh.
that church is in Philly.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
The one that was when he did the Amen show.
Right.
Yeah, that church is in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's in Philadelphia, yeah. But, I'm the youngest of 10. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. I'm the only, three of us left.
Oh, wow.
Right, three of us left.
Like the two right above you, or?
Well, I've got, my three brothers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Marcelina's still in a nursing home. I have my sister Janet that lives in Frederick, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Yeah. We communicate, but I've got 45 nieces and nephews that I love.
Wow, that's a lot of nieces
yeah.
and nephews.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
10
know,
of you all, 15, that's amazing.
I got 10 great nieces and nephews, and I have 5 grandsons. So.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm loving it.
And how many children do you have?
I have 3.
Yep.
They're all grown now. Oh, no. I got one that's graduating in June. Hallelujah. From Georgia State University.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
She's the secretary for the National Negro Council in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed that she joined. I didn't try to lead her anywhere, but I guess she said, Daddy, you're a radical. I'm joining this.
Yeah. Wow.
I didn't
wow.
know I was a radical. I just like people to be treated fairly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm sure you and Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz will have a lot to talk about when you all sit down
yeah.
and have that conversation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, you should bring your collection, give it to him as a gift. Okay, it's like a 10-volume set.
I didn't hear you. My phone broke up. What'd you say?
I said you could bring your collection, give it to him as a gift, a 10-volume set.
That's funny. 12 volumes. We went from 3 to 6 to 12. That's great. I like that.
I said 10. But you want to be 12? Okay, so a dozen. Okay. And what you could do, you could name them, you know, some of the top hits from the Blue Notes. You know, you could say,
yeah.
If you don't know me by now, it could maybe be volume 1.
That's a good idea. Dude, I'd have to move, though.
Oh, just take a tour. You haven't been to Europe in a while. Just take a tour.
I'd have to disappear and move to Alaska somewhere where they couldn't reach me.
No, just take a tour, you know, before by the time they figure out where you are, you're moving on to the next part of the tour.
I better have some bodyguards in an armored vehicle.
The truth is the best bodyguard, right?
That's right. That's too funny. That's right. It's
yeah.
been a pleasure. You know that?
Yeah, that's been really great. So tell us about what you bring into San Francisco September 19th through the 23rd.
well, what we do is, and we haven't done nightclub in a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and this is I'm looking forward to it because of the fact that we can really sit down and give folks history of the Blue Notes.
Okay, nice.
So what I do is I try to talk through the show and give you an idea who we are and
mm-hmm.
who was in the group and the songs that we have done and what we do now and
mm-hmm.
and bring the audience into the show.
Oh, that's great. So it's like a little theater mixed with the music.
Yeah, and the history.
Right, good. That's great.
Yeah, with some jokes here and there, because I'll throw some in.
Oh, yeah, you're funny. Yeah.
And that's what the show's all about. And we dance and we sing, and then we'll explain the history of the group, and we'll dance and sing some more, and we'll do some tributes to some old Blue Notes like Teddy and Harold.
Mm-hmm.
And the songs that Harold wrote, and a lot of folks didn't know he wrote, and some songs that Teddy did, and some things that we throw in from the 70s.
Right, yeah.
And we give them that kind of show for, an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't been in San Francisco in a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
We usually do Stockton.
Okay.
And we go to...
Hello?
Holistics.
Okay. You said you usually do Stockton?
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got Facebook on my phone and somebody's trying to get that. I don't want to talk.
Oh. So you said that you usually do Stockton, so this is your first time in San Francisco?
Yeah, well, it's 70 Soul Jam with the Stylistics.
Oh, okay.
And usually we only do like 3 or 4 songs and we're gone.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this time we can really get into it, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's just all you, and you're going to be with us for 6 whole days. I mean, like, my goodness.
I hear you. That's going to be
so great. So people can, see you on the 19th when you hit town, but you might be tired, and then go back and see you on Saturday, because you have 2 shows on Saturday, 7 and 9:30.
Oh, my God, I don't know if I can last.
And then Sunday the 23rd, you say farewell until next time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But that'd be great. That'd be great. We did the Monterey Jazz Festival a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, the Monterey Blues Festival. It's like the Jazz Festival hasn't happened yet. Oh, you did. Oh, I wish I would have known that. That would have been nice. Nice preview.
It was us and the Jones Girls. It was really nice.
Oh, who are the Jones Girls? I don't know them.
They were from Philly. Mm-hmm. You're Gonna Make Me Love Somebody Else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what their biggest song was.
Okay.
And we did that with Russell Thompson, the lead singer of the Stylistics.
Okay.
Yeah, he was there.
But this one
will be fun because it'll just be us.
So you didn't get a chance to just break out with all your stuff.
We can really roll.
Okay. Nice. So I want to have 2 more questions. One is about Wake Up Everybody. Tell me the story behind that song, because it's just it's just such a call to action,
In fact, Obama had it as his theme song in his first election.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I was reading about that in your bio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what happens is, Wake Up Everybody, Toodles and Gene wrote that, McFadden and Whitehead.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And their whole picture of that song was the same thing that we've been talking about. That we run around thinking we're successful, but our race is not successful. We need to start educating and projecting to the rest of the people in our race to bring them up.
Mm-hmm.
We got to elevate ourselves.
Right.
So basically what he was saying in the song is that the elevation has to be done by not just us, but everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So on the show, I talk about how we need to stop killing each other, but also reiterate the fact that we need to be united in the family.
Mm-hmm.
For us to develop. We can't be prejudicial. We have to give everybody a chance to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Wake Up's all about.
Right. Yeah.
Teach a new way, and then they'll listen for what you have to say. You can't teach old rules. You gotta find out where they're at and be progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Wake Up's all about. And that's what we try to deliver in that song.
Right.
Not to kick the old ways out, but find a new way to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Because
sometimes
it works.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't skate old folks because they don't have any health plan and discard them, because they still have work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Make them happy before they pass away. Those are the real concepts of the song in verse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a thinking song. And that's why it's enlightenment, and he called it Wicca.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he felt the same way. Toodles was a lyricist that he had so much projection. He was a Muslim.
Okay.
And he had so much projection, and he was a real person. And Gene, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some great conversations just on life in general, because, you know, he had a lot of children also. And his son, Kenny, is a musician. He was devastated when his father was killed. He was working with my nephew in New Jersey. And
mm-hmm.
He still hasn't recovered.
Mm. Yeah.
But what happens is, Wake Up is a song that we take personal. And we try to deliver that at the end of every show, how we need to be a family. And
oh.
We need to educate our people. And
mm-hmm.
We do it in general. Educate our children, period. Black, white, green, or yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's educate everybody.
Right.
Like my father said, if some green people on earth, they'd be prejudiced against them, too.
Yeah.
And if you see me and a bear fighting, you help the bear, because I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
That's what I live with. That's my motto.
Right.
But Wake Up is basically that kind of song. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like just sort of the principles that are... spoken of or in the song are ones that, you know, you've been living all your life in your family
right.
and as an adult.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's why some nights it's hard for me to even talk about it because it brings a tear to my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, after that, we were in Denver, Colorado, a week
mm-hmm.
before that happened.
Oh.
In the same area. We did an outdoor concert. And it just took, we took that personal because
mm-hmm.
we were just there.
Yeah.
And some of the folks that had come to see us were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that personal. But it's got to be a stop to this legalization. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into that.
Yeah.
But that's where the song is going.
Okay.
And as long as we live, that's what we'll profess. We need to be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
United.
And you mentioned, you know, that you all performed at the president's red, white, and blue inaugural ball.
In
January 2009, you did that
great.
Song because that was his signature song. I mean, isn't that amazing to have your song, the signature song for someone's presidential campaign, and the person wins? It's like, wow.
And the really strong part about it was history.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he was the first black president.
Yeah.
He used our song. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about humbling.
Yeah, yeah. And,
it
you know.
So humbling
mm-hmm.
that he actually believed in those words.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we, and you know, to this day, it's still humbling.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's, we've just been blessed.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how many Blue Notes has been, we've been blessed.
Right, yeah. And then,
I can't take that, you know, there's no other way to put it, but the fact that the blessings come from above, and if you're living right, they come to you.
Yeah, yeah, and then, you know, other songs like, you know, If You Don't Know Me By Now, we already mentioned The Love I Lost, Don't Leave Me This Way, and Bad Luck.
Yeah.
And, if you don't wake up, then you're going to have bad luck, right?
There you go. So you got it to be true.
Mm-hmm, totally, yeah.
Yeah, but what happens is when you have people that are writing that write from the heart,
mm-hmm.
And Harold had a vision to say, yeah, I want to do that song.
Mm-hmm.
Like he heard Wake Up, he said, he started crying when he was playing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He said, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it. Mm-hmm. And he would be, he's smiling now.
Yeah.
30 years later, 40 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Classic song.
Yeah.
John Legend did it in Africa.
Oh, nice.
We were supposed to go, but it didn't happen like that. But
mm-hmm.
the arrangement of Wake Up, he did in Africa at the World Cup.
Oh, okay.
Year.
Oh, nice.
Wake Up with Black Mombasa.
Uh-huh.
I had pictures
yeah.
that whole thing, and he went over there and did it.
You mean Ladies with Black Mombasa?
Yes.
Oh, but that was nice.
And so when we were in New York, we did Graham's Tomb last year, year for last.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the show, and he sang Wake Up With Us.
Okay.
Yeah. And Keith Sweat.
Ah, nice, nice.
Keith Sweat didn't sing because his voice ain't into where we at, but John did.
Yeah.
So it worked. It really worked. Good kid, too.
Mm-hmm.
Good man.
Yeah.
He said it would be a privilege for him to sing with us. I mean, it was mm-hmm. a privilege for him and for us also.
Right, yeah.
But he's a good man.
That's great. Yeah. So my last questions are about how, you know, this songwriting team, Gene McFadden and John Whitehead, how did Harold Melvin, you know, sort of meet them to be able to be able to have access to these songs? And then the second question is the name Blue Note, because people think Blue Note and they think the record company, and I'm wondering, where did the Blue Notes part come in? I mean, is there a blue note that you can hit or something?
Yeah.
Is there a color of the note that's blue?
It's augmented seventh.
It's augmented seven?
Yeah, that's a blue note. It's a
Okay. Oh, how does it sound? Can you do one for me?
There's augmented seventh, half step up. Seven raised nine. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
That's what the blue note is. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know those head colors. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's where that's where it came from.
Okay.
And as far as the writers were concerned. Toodles and Gene and Hippie. Hippie wrote Me and Mrs. Jones and he wrote a lot of songs for Gamblin' Huff. They were staff writers.
Okay.
Like Holland Dozier and Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And same way Barry Gordy treated them.
Okay.
See, Barry Gordy had staff writers, so he didn't have to pay him royalties.
Mm-hmm.
That's another story. But I'm not going to touch that one. But what happens is when you have staff writers and they work for a salary.
Okay.
And, you know, all the production goes underneath whoever owns the company.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Right, yes.
So they just get paid a salary for the song.
Hmm.
For the role.
Forever? Like even to date? Like they don't get
roles? No, that you can't do that now because everybody's educated.
Okay.
You have lawyers doing contracts now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, back in the day, you know, people just wanted to be heard, seen,
mm-hmm.
want the songs on the radio. So they were taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the groups.
Right.
You know, groups, they wind up being poor after having 6 or 7 gold albums.
Right, yeah.
Right, and that was because the people in charge made all the money.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Barry Gordys of the world.
Right.
And the acts didn't make, they were dying broke.
Mm-hmm.
Alcoholics, shooting themselves.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but that's how we treated our artists.
Mm-hmm.
We had no respect for them. So Al decided that he wanted to have respect for some guys that wrote for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted Gamblin' Huff said, "Well, you know, I want McFadden and Whitehead," because he knew them before they got into the company.
Okay.
They were traveling with Otis Redding as the Epsilons. And it was a singing group, and they missed the plane.
Mm-hmm.
The Otis was on.
Oh.
Right.
Oh.
McFadden and Whitehead.
Yeah, well, that's good.
They were the Epsilons.
Yeah, okay.
And they started writing, and that's how they got started by, you know, coming down to P.I. and say, "We got some music," you know.
What's P.I.?
Philadelphia International.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they would come down on Market Street and just tell Gamble Huff they had, you know, music.
Mm-hmm.
So Gamble and them liked their personalities because they're bubbly, and they had some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Hooks and Me and Backstabbers, they wrote for O.J.
Right.
992 arguments. He wrote that over. He was having to be the arguments with his wife. But they got along with the OJs and they got along with Harold. And Harold loved what they were doing. And their songs had the message that Harold wanted to project. He wanted the Blue Notes to be a blue collar group.
Oh.
And that's what his whole image of the Blue Notes for people that are working, brothers that are going to work every day,
mm-hmm.
and they'll know how to talk to their women when they get home. They can listen to our music, and then we would tell them the story so they could get over.
That's nice.
That was his concept.
Yeah. That's a great concept, because a lot of times people don't have the language.
Yeah. And what happens is it gives you an opportunity to be a lover.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
He probably saved a lot of families, huh?
We made a lot of babies, too.
Yeah, but saving the relationships because this writing had content and it had story and it had relevance.
Right.
It still does.
Right. I had people, they come up to us now.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, your song got me through 30 years of marriage. And I had three kids because of y'all.
Oh, my, that's funny.
They took me to bed on the If They Don't Know Me By Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's my day. That's what Pearl, he always sat down and said it, because I sat there, I listened to every word he said.
Mm-hmm.
He used to keep me up all night talking. Hmm. I said, Harold, I got to go to bed. I ain't finished with you yet. But I love to talk, and I sit there and listen to him all night.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had such great concept of show business.
Right. Yeah.
I'd be a fool not to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where I'm at. But that was his whole principle. Mm-hmm. He wanted the working man to have some voice.
Yeah.
And that was his key to bring them music that they could relate to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that color blue has a lot of levels. I mean, you think about blues music, you think about blue collar, you think about the blue note.
There you go. Now you got it. That's exactly where he's at. A great marketing tool before its time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
I had no idea it was going to be such a successful marketing tool.
Wow, yeah.
But all the songs were basically blue collar music.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah, the people's music, huh?
Yes, exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so wonderful. Well, gosh, you have been so generous with your time. I really appreciate this lovely conversation and looking forward to getting my autographed copy set of the, I don't know how many volumes we're on now.
you'll have to say who you are when I see you so we can have another conversation.
Oh, sure, no problem. And are you all bringing your own band, or are you going to use the house band, or are they going to pull it together for you?
We're bringing some folks we're bringing some guys from Washington with me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Folks that you normally perform with?
Yeah, I got Bam Bam, my drummer's coming, I think Scripps coming. He's a keyboard player. He works with the Manhattans, but he's coming with us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm bringing them all with me.
Okay.
It'll be a fun fest. We're going to have a ball with that band.
Yeah, you bringing any horns or just a rhythm section?
Rhythm section, I think we're using the San Francisco horn section.
Okay, so you're bringing your keyboardist and your drummer and you're bringing a bass player?
Bass and lead guitars.
Okay.
We're going to bring four folks with us.
Okay.
Four or five, I don't know for sure.
So if you bring a bassist, who's that?
We're using, I think Kent's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Our bass player is a fireman.
He is?
He's
fireman.
He's on the fire department in Philadelphia.
Well, you all really are blue collar, aren't you?
That's right. And sometimes he can't. I have another guy that plays bass. Keith Busey, he's in Washington with me.
Uh-huh.
And I have Calvin Harrison. He's a police officer in Philadelphia. He plays guitar.
Oh, my goodness. This is too funny.
He might not be able to make it because he just got a raise in his job.
That's funny.
We do it full time, but they have other jobs.
Right.
Yeah. So, my drummer works for NIH.
NIH?
National Health
Institute?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And he does the CSI stuff.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Wow.
And my keyboard player works for NSA, so I don't know what he does. He won't tell us.
Oh, that's true.
We just tell him when we're working, he shows up. We say, how'd you get it? He said, I flew. I said, on what? He said, I got a plane. I don't even ask him no questions no more. He just shows up.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
hell of a band, though, with that, and they love each other. We've been together for the last 10 years.
Wow, with a leader like you, I mean, it's like, it sounds like you just keep it moving and keep it really fun and keep it, you know, really tight and cohesive and sort of, you know, just keeping the vision alive of the man who founded the ensemble, the that, you know.
Yeah, I try to live by what he gave me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he gave me this whole concept, and he loved people.
Right.
And I love people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I talk to you. I love talk.
Mm-hmm.
I love talking to good people that listen and have something to say.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The idiots I don't talk to.
Well, you can say not long, huh?
Real short.
Wow. Well, again, thank you so much for this great conversation. And one of your members is having a birthday at the end of this month, August 30th.
Are you?
One of your members.
Your birthday?
No, one of your members of the group. He's having a birthday at the end of this month. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which one is it? It's not John Morris. Is it Rufus? Yeah, Rufus Thorne is having a birthday.
August 31st.
Yeah, the 30th,
Yeah, one of them did. I can't keep track of
it. Yeah, and he says
he's 61.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 60. I'll be 64 next year.
Okay, y'all are still not that old.
No, we're still dancing and singing.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing y'all.
Dino's birthday's in November. He'll be 63.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, super. Yeah. Well, you all have safe travels, to San Francisco in September, and looking forward to seeing you all in action on stage.
I can't wait.
It should be fun.
Yeah, can't wait. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you. You take good care.
You too.
All right, peace and blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was Anthony Brooks, and tonight at the Raz Room is opening night for Harold Melvin's Blue Notes. And we are joined, I believe, in the studio by Raymond Nat Turner. Good morning, Raymond. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. I introduced you like an hour ago. And then put on this interview that had to run its course. I'm so happy to see that you stuck around, because we want to talk about Upsurge is leaving, and we didn't even know it.
Yeah,
well, you all are like on the East Coast, like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, firstly, I wanted to say I listened to the entire interview that you just did. I really enjoyed it because I had gone back and watched Blue Notes perform countless times on YouTube, and one of my favorite tunes of all time is the one, The Love I Lost. I love that song. I can listen to that forever. So I enjoyed the interview, and it was quite informative and educational, so I had a ball listening.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much. So when I was listening to the interview with Tony again, I was thinking, wow, you know, Raymond and Tony have so much in common around, you know, educational values and activism and revolution. I mean, wow, when I was looking at some of the things that he said that he did around starting the university and shutting down stuff, and you have a serious history of activism, you know, coming up under your mother.
Yeah,
you know, in Southern California, children, you know, being a part of the Black Panther community schools, and yeah, just talk a little bit about your work, and you know, and sort of how you've come up, and then you know, all of this is reflected in your ensemble, you know, Upsurge Music and Jazz.
Well, I have to give so much credit to my mother, you know, because she was a very hardcore activist throughout her entire life. You know, she, in 1945, the L.A. Sentinel called her a political dynamo. And then your previous guest mentioned Sanford and Son. And we were close friends with Whitman Mayo, who played Shady Grady on Sanford and Son. In fact, when I first came to New York to go to study at the New Lafayette Theater, I was going to be studying with Ed Bullins, but Ed was out of town, and so Whitman was at the theater, and he was a friend of my mom, so he picked me up, and he took me to all these bookstores and bought me books and said, read this, and took me to plays, the Negro Ensemble Theater, I saw the River Niger, Amir Baraka's plays, The Dutchman and Toilet, and all this good stuff. But one of the things Whitman said about my mother, when I saw him in Oakland, the last time I saw him in downtown Oakland, he said she's, when she finally leaves this plane, when she checks out, they should have on her an epitaph that says a brilliant organizer. And that's what I grew up around, you know, that my mother was just constantly involved in organizing. She was one of the founders of the Charles Drew Postgraduate Medical School in Los Angeles and one of the founders of the Martin Luther King Jr. General Hospital, founder of the first women's welfare rights organization, and she was very instrumental in bringing public transportation to South Central L.A. And so, you know, in terms of the Rapid Transit District, RTD buses and so forth. So she, you know, she was constantly involved. And, you know, I grew up under that and watched her do it. And I guess you can't be there and not have some of that rub off on you. You know, it's just impossible.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. And then when one looks at, you know, your name, Raymond Nat Turner, and you've actually, you know, performed on stage, you know, in a play about, you know, John Brown's Truth, I think is the name of the piece.
Yeah, with Bill Crossman. I'm indebted and grateful for Bill William Crossman, who's the author of the musical John Brown's Truth, for giving me opportunity to stretch and grow and, you know, try some different things, because it's improvised vocally. It has a libretto, a text, but in terms of how you approach it each night, it's up to the individual actors how they, if they want to focus more on spoken word or if they want to and, you know, try their vocals out or whatever the case may be. And so I'm really grateful for him for giving me that opportunity. Speaking of stage, though, the funny thing, one of my early, I guess you could say milestones was opening for the great James Baldwin as a, you know, I was a youngster. And the funny thing is that there's a saying that youth is wasted on the young, you know. And when I look back on it, I that really applies to me, and I can understand young people today in terms of the growing pains, because I opened for James Baldwin, but I took too long, and I was up there. And he was very patient and very generous, so thank goodness, you know, because I was just went way over. I just got, you know, young people, and being young, and some people even today don't know when to get off stage. You know, it's time, there's a time, and it wasn't my show, and I went over. And so then I made another even more serious mistake the following day, because people at the school we were at, you know, we were on it was Los Angeles Southwest College, and it was football field. It was on the football field, and there were several thousand people out there. And so some of the students came up to me and asked me, would I come back tomorrow for their Black Student Union? And so about 60 people came out to see me, you know, as a, you know, my, you know, just on my own strength, as opposed to coming to see James Baldwin. And I went there, and I'm, you know, like all of 18 or 19, and so I'm looking for this huge numbers like the previous day, and I was disappointed. And would you believe the arrogance and the hubris? I didn't even do it. I said, there's not enough people. You're talking about growing pains. So that's really sad. But that's what it takes. Sometimes one has to make those kinds of mistakes, and then also, you know, be in, so to speak, the game for a minute and see. You know, like when you get 60 people anywhere today, I mean, that's a blessing. Period. Mm-hmm. So. But that, you know, that's the folly of youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then, you know, that you're still around and you're able to reflect, that shows that, you know, there's a lesson to be learned there, and you learned it because you remember it, and now you're sharing it with young people who might hear you so that they don't have to make those kind of mistakes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And then my mother, you know, is generous and patient as she was. She told me, she said, she always said, look, baby, you know, if there are two people out there, 2,000, it doesn't matter. You do the same thing that you would do, period. You give it your best and your all. That's what she told me. And I took it to heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking about the LA Southwest College, and it's a really wonderful institution that was built in the community. It's a really beautiful campus if people aren't aware of it. It's very, very nice. And speaking of which, I was thinking about when you were talking about John Brown's truth, and I just saw this wonderful piece by Zacco, Joanna Haygood's company. It's called Sailing Away, and it's about the 1858 migration of African Americans, many of them prominent, to Victoria, British Columbia. This predates the Civil War, and because African Americans were being, you know, continually disenfranchised within the courts as citizens of California, which was brought into the Union as a free state, and so they left. And Mary Ellen Pleasant, you know, she was here as well, and she helped you know, support much of the legislation that was you know, in the courts, try to fight some of these unfair laws. One of which was that black people could not testify in court, which meant, you know, if you can't testify, then you can't be witness to wrongdoing. They were silenced, literally. And I was thinking about Mary Pleasant. I hadn't realized until I read some information about her. She actually was a friend of John Brown.
John Brown, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she had actually had some plans to help him.
Right.
You know,
and I think actually she may have contributed financially to the operation at the Harper's Ferry, as I understand, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she did, and she also, they found a note with her signature on it, but they misread it in his pocket. So so she was able to escape and come back to the West Coast. It's like, well, small world, that is too fun.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about some of Upsurge's performances. You know, you are frequent you know, collaborators, having Vukani Mwetu on your shows, and you're being on Vukani Mwetu's show. And then, you know, I remember meeting you 20-something years ago when you used to rehearse at the Infirmary Park and or Little Bobby Hutton Park, and then you came over and performed at the African American Celebration Through Poetry, which is 23 years old. You know,
how many years now?
23.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and you had all these young folks coming through your ensemble, because one thing that distinguished your ensemble, Upsurge, is that you have a live jazz band performing, mm-hmm. and your vocalese is, like, awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. I so much appreciate that. Well, you know, the irony and the interesting thing is that, you know, being here in New York with I've been running a lot with Daryl Green, who's in the Bay Area, originally from
wonderful.
Oakland. He's Oakland's own, and Oakland should really take a lot of pride in him, because he is just really doing it up big here. I mean, you know, he's everybody who knows anything about music knows that he's one of the best young drummers here in New York, period. You know, everyone knows it. And so he's, you know, we were over in Brooklyn, and we were sitting in the car with him, and we were talking, and he was saying, God, I need a gig to, you know, get this rent paid. And all of a sudden the phone rang, and this guy, this other drummer, called him with four gigs, you know. Just one by one, he went down and checked off the gigs, you know, with vocalists, this and that and other. And so I bring that up because, as you mentioned earlier, one of the features of our group was that we had a lot of youth, and primarily youth out of Berkeley High. It was a 5-year period where we had different people in the group. We focused on having these young, I say young lions, if you will. That's an overly used term, but I'll use it anyway. Like the Geechee Taylors and Howard Wileys and David Yule's and Philip Byers, et cetera, all these people. And so we wanted to have Daryl in the group, and he was like 13, and his mother wouldn't let us have him in the group. And I was always curious all these years about why. And so finally here in New York, he told us, you know, because we had been in this production. It was called Spread Love. And so Howard was a, you know, very young man. He was playing saxophone with us. And so there was some of the people everyone who was in this production, Spread Love, it was an incredible kind of free-form production. Like you had Robert Henry Johnson, as you know, very acclaimed dancer in the Bay Area and beyond. Malia Connor, David Boyce, who's with the Brown Fellinis. Just on and on, it goes on. Abdi, I don't remember Abdi's last name.
Yeah, Rashidi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carla Brundage.
Just
a bunch of folk. And so there was and then Nikki Finney, and there, I can't think of Nikki's last name. But in any case, there was some nudity there. And, you know, because what it was each performer or group expressing their idea of what constituted love or their what expressed love for them. And so at one point there was nudity, and so Howard's folks took him out of the production because it was a 2 or 3 day production. And then so apparently Daryl's mom heard about that, and so perhaps she thought that, you know, our performances were incorporating nudity, and so she didn't want him, you know, her 13-year-old son to be a part of what we were doing. And so I only found that out years later. I thought perhaps it may have been political, but it was about that. And so the ironic thing is that we did a gig just in August here at the Dissident Arts Festival, and so Daryl, he put together the group we work with. You know, he brought everybody together, and really wonderful group of musicians, all very top tier young giants, including this woman Camille Thurman, who's a saxophonist, tenor saxophonist, and beautiful singer. I think of her as Lil Shaka. She's you know, Shaka Khan is her, one of her heroes, and she you know, you could see the influence, you could hear the influence. And so we had a beautiful hit thanks to Daryl. And going, you know, in the conceptually, the idea of working with young people came from Art Blakey. You know, I studied what he did with the Messengers. He was always bringing in these young folks, and they were sort of terming out, and then they go on and do their own thing. And then another great giant from here, Betty Carter, with her groups. You know, I went to so many of her performances and went to school watching her. She was such a consummate artist and visionary. So anyway, that's how that came about. I didn't do it. It wasn't original. It was just watching these masters and trying to learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And you know, sort of along that same line, your involvement with Angela Wellman's Oakland Public Conservatory and the Frederick Douglass Youth Ensemble and the Alternative 4th July event that, you know, became like an annual ritual, which was really wonderful as well.
That was so much fun for me, you know, artistically speaking. Well, the interesting thing how that came up is there were some problems with the young people, young African-American musicians in particular, and Latino musicians in auditioning for some of these things like the, I can't think of what it's called now over in San Francisco. The musicians were beautiful players, but they didn't know how to audition. And so because they couldn't audition, well, they weren't getting picked in some of these ensembles that were pretty prestigious for young people. And so I remember Wellman and I were sitting in the OPC van, in the back of the van, and we were just talking. And so I just said, you know what, well, let's just put our own ensemble together, and that'll solve that. And so I'm the master at naming things. And so I said, we'll call it the Frederick Douglass Youth Ensemble, FDYE, you know. And so that was that. And so we had the T-shirt. We got the T-shirts, and Frederick Douglass had this, there was this quote from Frederick Douglass that said, it's far easier to build strong young people or boys and girls than to repair broken men and women or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's the gist of it.
And
it was
then,
it was the alternative 4th of July or the Frederick Douglass Day celebration. That was Wellman's idea because what it came out of after we had done a performance, an upsurge performance, we were doing the Bay Area Jazz Poetry Festival. It was our second year doing it, or our first year actually. She says, "God, we need to do something else. I feel like doing something else." And I said, okay, well. And then she sent me Frederick Douglass's quote. Do you remember from the 1852 speech he did, "What is the 4th of July to me?"
Yes.
What is the 4th of July to the Negro, right?
Yeah, to the American Negro is
4th of July. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so based on that, so we say, wow. And so we put it together. And conceptually, it's incredible idea, and I think OPC is an institution that should continue that because it's perfect for their mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have, you know, the young people perform, you know, all over the place. And Ayikwe, you know, he's you know, alumnus now of the ensemble because he's at university now. I believe he's at Berkeley.
Oh, Allende?
Allende, yeah.
Yeah, Allende Webb, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember him. Watching him grow. He was a young drummer that used to do Brannis McKenzie's. She used to have a Thursday night session called Not for Singers Only. Mm-hmm. And he was the house drummer for that every Thursday night. And it was such a treat to watch him just grow and mature. And then he studied with Jazz Sawyer, who, of course, you know, worked with Abby Lincoln.
Right, yeah. And you have a piece on chromatology. We opened with the piece, Ancestors. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got Abby's house.
Abby's house, yeah.
With Abby Lincoln.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wonderful woman, yes.
Yeah. And that was a favorite of one of our mentors who's gone since, the Doug Edwards, you know.
Yeah,
he loved that house.
Yeah. And then another one of your friends, Donald Doug Bailey, was just inaugurated into the, he was just honored with a National Treasures Award from the Oakland Public Conservatory, and that was a great concert and conversation.
Oh yeah, Donald Duck Bailey. Yeah, out of Philly. These guys, your previous guest was talking about Philly, and that's where Donald Bailey hails from Philadelphia, Germantown in Philadelphia, and he went out on the road with Jimmy Smith at 19 years old, and I guess he worked with Jimmy for about 8 years, and then went with Carmen McRae for 4, and he was on at least 160-some recordings when I last counted, and that's how I really got into the mix, so to speak, because I worked for Donald Duck Bailey. I managed his groups. He had an octet that he had formed with the late bassist Herbie Lewis, and it was called 8-8, as in the number of 8, Misbehaving. And well, that's how I met Wellman. Angela was in that group along with a few other people that we know, Melvin Butts and all these folks.
Yeah.
And so through Duck, I met a lot of the jazz greats like Max Roach, Art Blakey, Jimmy Smith, of course, Stanley Turrentine, and the list goes on and on. Billy Hart, Billy Higgins, you know, all the drummers. And so, Duck, he taught me. Because he had been a sideman with Jimmy Smith and with Carmen McRae as long as he was, he taught me a lot of things about leading a group. Because one of the things is he was very fair in terms of the way he handled compensation and the way he treated folks. You know, he was very fair, and that was one of the lessons that I took from him.
Yeah. Well, we only have a few minutes. If we can have another conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be really great. But I want you to let people know about this concert. You're coming back to the West Coast to leave, you know, properly so we can say goodbye and bring you gifts and
well, you know, like there's an old saying that every closed door ain't shut and every goodbye ain't gone, you know, so we anticipate, you know, trying to make it back every fall, you know, Octobers and things like that, you know. So,
yeah.
But, we're going to be at the Freight and Salvage on Friday the 28th of September, 8 p.m., and we'll probably do one set. And we'll probably have a lot of fun, I think. I'm feeling it. I think we will.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fun.
So who's going to be in the Upsurge Ensemble?
You're
going to bring in a lot of friends and things like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing is for 15 or 16 years, we've worked with Richard Howell, you know, saxophones and vocals and sometimes percussion, talking drums sometimes. And then we've worked with Ron Belcher for probably, if we worked with Richard for 16, we worked with Ron for about 15 or 14 years. And so, but Ron's not going to be available for this, so we're going to have Michael Jones on bass. And then as a rule of thumb, we had been working with Tammy Hall on piano,
yeah,
or either Glenn Pearson, but neither of those two are going to be available.
Oh,
and so we're going to have another stalwart that works in the Richard Howell quintet. That would be Fred Harris.
Fred Harris does piano and drums. He's awesome.
Yeah. And then we're very blessed to have,
yes,
I call it Mean Green, Daryl Green on drums, you know, Oakland's own Daryl Green. He's back from New York. We're supposed to be, you know, coming back here together.
Ooh.
We'll see how that works out. But anyway, yeah, Daryl's playing drums and Michael Jones on bass, Fred Harris on piano, and then, of course, Richard on saxophones and
like
that. And then, you know, we never know who might show up as, you know, to sit in. You know, maybe Calvin Keyes would show up with his axe and things, you know. Like, so, you know, you never know.
Yeah, that would be really super, yes. Because I know you all, you know, you're so well-loved and respected. If somebody's in town, they're certainly going to be in the audience. And who knows, they might be carrying their instrument.
Yeah, so yes, but we know the one thing we can guarantee, and then also one of the things that I've loved to do over the last few years is get people up from the audience and get folks involved, you know, like I'm not going to work, you know, and not have other people work too. So, yeah, you know, people come to our gigs, you know, they have to anticipate being put to work too. We'll bring them up.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, we always have a lot of fun. That's the main thing, though.
Yeah, cool. How's Ziggy doing?
She's cool. You know, she's running and doing her gym thing. And, you know, so we've been, you know, because we're currently staying with a friend, and then we move into our space, and we're scheduled to move on October 1 into our own space, you know, and so, yeah, it's things move here. That's all I have to say.
Right.
Yeah, they really do move.
So Raymond, do you all have a website?
Yeah, that is upsurgejazz.com.
Okay.
www.upsurgejazz.com.
Excellent. And got a choice here. We can play Cape Coast Rooster from Chromatology, or the last time I saw Sunny from the same one. So which one do you want to go out with?
It's your show. Why don't you pick? It's hard for me to pick. They're all my children. You know, it's hard. Because, would you pick Tassina or Belalia?
Oh, and also like I have Abby's house, too.
Oh, now you make the choice. You do it. You be the decider.
Well, you know, hey, I'm a fan. And so you've got this particular CD, Chromatology, and you've got All Hands on Deck. Do you have anything new coming out in the next
Funny, Richard and I talked. He's a night owl, so I called him. It was late here. I called him, and we just hung out on the phone, and we talked about wanting to get back into the studio again. Because Richard Howell, you know, just for your folks and your audience and for everyone in the world to know, is a really, really fabulous producer. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he's, you know, that's an altogether different gig than him playing the horns and even singing. Yeah, he's a remarkable talent in the studio. And so, we're talking about trying to see if we could get something going. So it's time. But, you know, the time has gone so fast on those two CDs. We didn't even, we looked around and they're like in school. They're like in third or fourth grade in school, you know, in terms of school age years. So it's time for us to do something else. And as with most things, when you're an independent artist, you know, it's about resources, finances, and so forth. And so that's always the question more than material and talent and all that. You know, so, but who knows?
Mm-hmm. Right, cool.
And one thing, while I do have your ear, I really want to take this opportunity to sincerely thank you for just, you know, all the work you've done over the years and the support you've lended us. But not just us, but the arts community in general in the Bay Area and nationally and even internationally. And so I so much appreciate what you do and what you've done. And I remember specifically we did an interview after the death of Gil Scott-Heron. I remember being on with you, and it was a remarkable tribute to a great talent. So I thank you for what you do and what you've done.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, Raymond. And if I didn't have to run off to work, we could talk about jazz and democracy, because we were going to talk about, you know, the anniversary of Occupy.
There'll be other opportunities, you know. Yeah. So and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure. And this is just, you know, one of many conversations, because, you know, you are one of our favorite guests.
Thank you so much.
All right. So, gosh, it's my choice, huh? This is just
yes,
too hard for Gemini.
Is that it?
Oh, my goodness. You're a Gemini, too. That's wrong. Okay.
Well, my birthday is on the 1st, and so I get the first. I get to rule the roost.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sort of filling Abby's house because we called her name.
Okay.
But I'm also thinking about Sonny Rollins because he's going to be here for SF Jazz.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ziggy loves Sonny. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
My God. She's a Sonny nut.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do just a Ziggy loves Sonny. We're going to do Sonny.
Okay. And he's really so he's still going strong, incredibly strong, you know.
Mm-hmm. Real encouraging.
Yeah, 82.
Wow, that is so amazing. You would never believe it. Yeah. But he's doing what he loves and
that's
it's
right.
doing well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he's
just
a model
like Charles Lloyd,
for the rest of
you know?
Us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Charles Lloyd, another person who's been doing it for a long time and going strong.
Incredible talent, yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you. And tell Ziggy we say hey.
All right.
And have a wonderful journey this way. Tell Daryl, hey, I want to talk to you.
Oh, you want to do an interview with him?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pass that along to him.
That'd be excellent.
Okay.
You take good care.
All right.
Raymond.
Thank you so much again.
Okay. Peace and blessings.
All right now.
Was a New York summer night, mid-July delight.